This program begins a series addressing journalism. Citizens are concerned about the freedom of the press and the continuity of information.
Hello again, this is Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist, co-host of our semi-weekly program of Health and Happiness. Although we have an emphasis on content of mental health concerns, anything aiding our health and happiness is focused upon. We thank the Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee for the initial inspiration and support. This is KGVM 95.9 or KGVM.org. We have another great program with a great guest today. Dr. Suzanne Wood will now introduce.
Once we eagerly awaited the newspaper for the new sports information and sports news, all the ball scores, the crosswords, the sales, and even the comics. But now that has changed. We have it all at our fingertips any time of day. It's a dramatic change over the past few years. You may ask, what is the consequence for our newspapers? Well, from the 2024 Local News Initiative report, since 2005, more than 3,200 print newspapers have vanished. Newspapers continue to disappear at a rate of more than two per week. And as news organizations continue to contract, news deserts or areas that lack consistent local reporting that fills critical information needs continue to expand. In this report, we found there are 206 counties across our country without any news source, up from 204 last year, and there are 1,561 counties with only one news source. Altogether, this means that almost 55 million people in the United States have limited to no access to local news. With these changes, there have been massive layoffs, with over 8,000 journalists laid off just since 2022. We are proud and happy to have a working journalist here with us to speak about what's going on. Please welcome Jeff Welch, the managing editor of the Daily Chronicle, our local news source. Welcome, Jeff.
It's great to be here.
We're so glad to have you. And perhaps first you could kind of share with us how you became interested in journalism and how you prepared for that work.
Well, you know, I've been doing this more than 45 years now. And I wanted to be a journalist really since I was in high school and then in college. And there was a movie that we've heard an awful lot about in the past year or so, and especially after the passing of Robert Redford, and that was All the President's Men. And that movie alone inspired an entire generation of journalists like myself. And, you know, on top of that, I loved sports, and I found out kind of through the back door in an odd sort of way that I could actually write. I turned in a history paper in high school on the Lewis and Clark expedition, and I was a terrible student, but I was fascinated by this expedition. And when I got the paper back, I was given a D-, and it was said that it was clearly plagiarized. And actually, the paper wasn't plagiarized at all. And so, in an odd sort of way, that inspired me. And I came west for college, started work at the newspaper in Phoenix, Arizona, in the sports department in the late 1970s, and I've been doing this in a variety of ways ever since, and been in Bozeman now for 21 years, although in this position just for the past year. I actually came here happily from Western Oregon to be the sports editor of the Chronicle in 2004.
Wow. I love that story about your career and how it began. That teacher didn't know what a favor she did you. No possibility you could have written that Lewis and Clark paper.
That's exactly right. In fact, my 50th high school reunion in Michigan is next summer, and I'm going to go, and I understand that teacher is still alive, and I want to say hello, but you know what? I can't blame her. I was, a very inattentive student that skipped class all the time. I was lacking direction, and I found it in writing. I found it in sports writing, and I've loved this, and I feel like this is such an important role, and that a newspaper is such an important part of our community.
Oh, we couldn't agree more. It's something that the press has always been the hero to the American people. And like you said, from way back, the movies, the best movies might be about this very topic. How do we get to the truth? How do we keep it? How do we preserve it? And how do we get it out there?
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, we're the fourth estate for a reason. And we have been here to, you know, the old saying in our business is that, you know, we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comforted. And that really means the people in power. And so, you know, we're here to keep their feet to the fire. And, of course, All the President's Men was about Watergate. And obviously, up until this day, the people in power are pushing back. And, you know, in the introduction, which was a little bit depressing, but
I'm sorry.
You know, you talked about the news deserts, and it's really true, and it has really led to a significant increase in corruption among our government officials. You know, between that and you know, people with a certain political bent now taking over a lot of news organizations, it's very, very difficult to find objective journalism anymore, and newspapers, in fact, really are kind of the last bastion, because TV has gone more and more and more basically speaking to their own groups where people go to get their biases confirmed, whether it's Fox News or MSNBC on the other side. And you really, in my view, can't count on getting honest reports from any of them.
Exactly. We just need to somehow get a handle on how to find and get to and maintain the truth, if there is any way. Do you have any suggestions for us on that, Jeff?
Well, you know, I would say, and of course I'm biased, but local newspapers are still, you know, where they exist. And I will say one thing. You know, the Chronicle is a great example of we print about 3,500 to 4,000 newspapers a day, but we have more digital subscribers than we do print subscribers. And so you hear an awful lot about, let's say, the failing New York Times or, you know, failing media. And the reality is we have more people reading us than we ever have had in our history. It's just that people are consuming in a different way. And there's no question that the sources that people have available for getting news and information are varied. But what we've got for us here is we are still, you know, in pursuit of truth. We do seek balance, but more than that, we seek objectivity and fairness and getting it right. And, you know, there's kind of a new saying going around now in our circles, and that's, you know, because we have such we have people across the political aisles who are just flat out lying to us now. And so our job is, you know, if one person is saying that it's raining and another person is saying that the sun is out, it is our job to go to the window and see for ourselves and report on that. Now, of course, if it's sunny and we're saying so, then the people who are saying it's raining think it's biased and we're against them. And so it's a challenging environment, no question about it.
Well, in preparing for this information to come out, we remembered an old allegory about some blind men and a strange animal called an elephant. This is a very old allegory. A group of blind men heard that a strange animal called an elephant had been brought to town, but none of them were aware of its shape and form. Out of curiosity, they said, "We must inspect and know it by touch, of which we are capable." So they sought it out, and when they found it, they groped about it. The first person whose hand landed on the trunk said, "Oh, this elephant is like a thick snake." For another one whose hand reached its ear, it seemed like a kind of a fan. And for another person whose hand was upon its leg, the elephant was a pillar like a tree trunk. The blind man who placed his hand upon its side said the elephant is a wall, and the other getting its tail described it as a rope. The last felt its tusk, stating the elephant is that which is hard, smooth, and like a spear. So, yes, it's easy to fall into misinformation, which is a big topic for you right now from what you're telling us, Jeff.
Yeah, it is very much escalated over the past, I'm going to say, 10 years. And I think what's happened is that people in power have discovered that there really aren't consequences for providing misinformation. And then there are too many willing conduits of misinformation. And again, I go to both sides of the media aisle, and especially on television, where it is lucrative to keep your base angry and scared. And, you know, that is true of the right, and that is true of the left. And so sometimes it feels like we're lost in a windstorm here. But I do believe that there are a lot of people who want to get to the truth. And I'm really encouraged, having been here for a year now as the managing editor of the Chronicle. One thing that strikes me is people really care about this paper, and they count on it. And then the other thing, too, is historically people have been complained about the media on a number of levels. But my sense of people in this community is they really want the paper to survive and thrive. And I think there is a growing understanding of what happens when you have a news desert. And, you know, the Great Falls is a great example of that. They're owned by a company I used to work for called Gannett. It's the only Gannett paper in Montana. And they went from a newsroom just a few years ago of 27 people down to one. And yes, and it's a sports writer, in fact. And so they fill their paper with national news. And so there is nobody to go to government meetings. And, you know, when you have a reporter at a government meeting, a city council meeting, you know, county government, you name it, they know that they've got to be on their best behavior because it otherwise might be reported. And when you don't see a reporter at these meetings, you feel like you can get away with a lot more. And so in Great Falls, there has been an escalation in the amount of government corruption and shenanigans that you see up there. And, you know, there are people who have stepped in to try to create digital nonprofits, but a lot of those also have an agenda or a bias. And so it is very difficult these days. And we try, you know, I am still very much in the habit of searching for truth and finding stories in our community that are most important and valuable to our community.
And in fact, there's a large growing group of people who are highly concerned about this issue. The American Psychological Association recently had a group of international scholars from all around the world. And there were 10 of them who helped write the article, but many more who colluded with them to research about misinformation and its impact. What they found is there's a group of people who downplay the impact of misinformation. And that was their question. does misinformation really pose a problem? And they said, nah, there's not much of a problem there. But this group of scholars and policymakers found that misinformation has causal impacts on important beliefs and behaviors, and they all said they should therefore continue to take misinformation very seriously.
I think no question, and I think one thing they probably agree on is how easy it is, frighteningly, to manipulate people. And there are great examples of that over history. For instance, you know, more than a century ago, when only men smoked cigarettes, and the tobacco companies wanted to see if they could convert women, and they did almost overnight. And so, you know, it's the same thing. I think there have been some studies that suggest that if you sat and watched, you know, let's say Fox News for less than a week or MSNBC for less than a week, that you can be manipulated into believing what you're getting from those sources. And then people continue to go back there because their biases are being confirmed. And then they are, you know, they're driven again by anger and fear. You know, I experienced that with my mother, who was a Methodist minister and who watched MSNBC routinely, to the point where she would call in tears, fearful of whether Social Security was going to be taken away or whatever the case may be. And we finally, my brothers and I, got to the point where we put a lock on MSNBC. And I, again, would say the same thing. I know too many people who sit and watch Fox News all day long, and it is just dangerous. And these companies are making a fortune dividing us dividing and conquering. And again, that's where I see, you know, your local newspaper is being sort of a last bastion of an attempt for truth and honesty. And, you know, I give some of the TV stations around here some credit, too. But again, one third of them, or maybe one fourth of them, are owned by a company that is clearly conservative and actually sends text to the anchors to read that support conservative causes. And so you really have to be a critical thinker. And look at where you're getting your news and information. And that is, again, it is a huge challenge today.
And there's an actual psychological principle at work here. It's called confirmation bias.
Absolutely.
And it's that we tend to downgrade any information that disagrees with what we now believe or want to believe. And so it makes it harder for us to open our mind, open our consciousness, and to perceive where we can find the truth. And so there's another principle psychologists talk about, which is foot in the door, that once you have provided some information, there might be a reason why with that you would continue to hold on to that thought, that information, or that misinformation. So none of us is immune from these ploys, and there's actual work to that can include outright disinformation, like misleading arguments and scapegoating, and facts that are strictly speaking true but are decontextualized to promote misleading narratives. So there's so much at work out there for those operatives who want you to believe a certain way to manipulate all of us, each of us.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And what I find really discouraging is how many people are really not interested in truth or facts. And so much is based on emotion. And you can get into a debate over Thanksgiving dinner, and you can provide facts that are clearly from, you know, non-biased sources. And for some people, it just won't matter. And I fear that we continue to spiral in that direction. And I am not optimistic about how all this is going to turn out.
And, you know, the truth as you know, all of your life in journalism, is vital to the outcomes that we want to see, like freedom and democracy. And so there's a lot at stake here, would you say, Jeff?
Oh, there's no question that there's a lot at stake here. And, you know, we are important, and I think that is revealed in the fact that people in power, they spend so much time attacking the media or trying to undermine the media. And, you know, it's because if it weren't for, you look at some of the biggest stories ever broken, whether it was Watergate or whether, you know, the Catholic churches and the spotlight group at the Boston Globe. You know, I look at one of the great sports scandals of the past few years. It was the doctor who was with the U.S. gymnastics team. And that may never have come out if it hadn't been for the work of the Indianapolis Star. And I could go on and on. The Vietnam War, some of the information that came out of that the Washington Post dove into. And so if we don't have that anymore, these people in power, pretty much have carte blanche. And so when you talk about the loss of all the newspapers across the country, a lot of that is a concerted effort on the part of some companies, you know, to buy up these papers and then get rid of them, in part so that they don't have people keeping their feet to the fire.
And that's just something we all need to think about and try to do something about. I had another example for you that the psychologist looked into in studying about misinformation. Another one is later retracted claims. So if you say something, you can later retract it and it will be okay. But they say, for example, repeat exposure to later retracted claims in the media that weapons of mass destruction had been found in Iraq in 2003, not only led many citizens to believe in those claims, but even led people to believe that such weapons had been used against Allied forces, something that was never reported, but which people inferred. More generally, this means that even if online fake news is relatively rare, false beliefs formed in at least part from exposure to that misinformation are quite common.
Yes, 100%. And, you know, we're seeing in other ways too, Suzanne. You know, a great example of this, and I even learned something from the aftermath of the tragedy surrounding Charlie Kirk and his assassination. And when I saw the reactions from across the spectrum, it was surprising and stunning. And what I discovered, I had a sense of this, but it was really hammered home that the algorithms online, they see what people are reading and looking at or scrolling online. And so they feed information to people based on that. And so there were people who were, you know, ardent Charlie Kirk supporters who only saw him as a devout Christian who just wanted to talk to people and get young people involved, so on and so forth, a real champion. And had no exposure to some of the truly misogynist and other, you know, negative things that he said about people, including calling for the execution of Joe Biden, right? By the same token, if you were on the other side of the coin, all you ever got about Charlie Kirk was the clips of him calling for Biden's, you know, execution or some of the other things he said about minorities or women. And so you never had a sense of anything he did that might have been uplifting when the truth was really somewhere in the middle. But there were people who were ardent Charlie Kirk supporters who had no idea of some of the things that he said that were cruel. And again, by the same token, there were people who were anti-Charlie Kirk, who had no idea that he actually, at times, did try to do some uplifting conversations. And so, you know, that's the world we're living in now, and the algorithms are so sophisticated that you've seen that when if you go online and you click on a page, the next thing you know, you're getting advertisements.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of geared to you.
Yeah. So, our daughter went to South America a couple of weeks ago to help with some work down there, with some counseling work, and was texting us from there. And I started getting all sorts of ads from Brazil that I had never gotten before, because they were aware that I had some connection to that area.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It's like if we use this kind of thing as a force for positive, imagine what that would be like. But so, you know, for so many, it's just all about money, and it's used for a force for negative.
Well, and two, I wonder if the problem could be that we have all these new varying news feeds on all different platforms, and we don't necessarily know where they're coming from or if they are factual. Actually, in the past, when one of our main sources was the daily newspaper, the sources were typically identified, and we had faith that what we were reading had some basis in reality. How can you help us look at different news feeds, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one. I think, again, you want to look for as many objective or non-biased sources as you can. And I think one sort of inspirational thing we have taking place here now, you know, we've got the legacy media, which would be us, you know, the Lee Enterprises papers in Montana. There are five of them in Billings and Butte, Helena, Missoula, and Hamilton. And then, but I'm really encouraged by the rise of especially an outlet like the Montana Free Press, you know, which is nonprofit, which raises money, which gets grants on its own. It does not rely on advertising to support itself, and is making a point of doing objective journalism. And so this is something new, and there are a lot of these out there, and I think that this is the future of journalism in this country. I'm not as optimistic about corporate media. We keep tightening the belt, and we're doing okay right now, and actually our company seems to be growing a little bit, but the nonprofit model might be the way to go. Because you're not so reliant on advertising. That's what's crushed the print newspaper over the years. Just print advertising falling off the cliff, and we haven't figured out how to overcome that with just subscriptions. And so when you look at the nonprofits that don't rely on advertising, the Daily Montanan is another one. And there are some smaller ones in each community that are doing yeoman's work. And so I think going forward, we're going to see more of this. And then it really becomes up to people who want objective journalism to support it by either subscribing to outlets they feel are objective, they feel like they're getting a fair rendering of what's going on in their community, and then supporting the nonprofits like the Montana Free Press. I mean, a lot of these you can, for a monthly subscription is no more than a cup of coffee or a latte. And that'll ensure that we continue.
I want to make full disclosure here. We do subscribe to the Bozeman Daily Chronicle. Couldn't do without it. So, and I hear you. And I wonder, as you're talking about all these concerns that are making inroads on the field of journalism, ethical concerns come into play. How do you continue to keep your own integrity and deal with the changing journalistic world? And I think you've addressed that really well, and I appreciate that. And another main concern I found in researching this was job insecurity and economic pressures that used to be there were a lot of freelance reporters who could earn a living just covering stories from everywhere. How do you see this shaping up in the near future here, Jeff?
Well, and I still do rely on freelance reporters. In fact, as staffs have gotten thinner, that's been more of a go-to source. I think, you know, ethically, and I'm somewhat old school, although I've embraced the new media, they're just lines that I won't cross. And whether that's lines between editorial advertising or in how we conduct ourselves doing stories, I mean, we have to be able to send the message to people and market to people that we are objective and we are fair. And if that's what you want out of your media, this is the place to come for it.
I really appreciate your outlook and your ethical considerations and concerns. I know that can get real tricky sometimes, can't it?
Well, it can. And, you know, we run into a lot of challenges. I think there are more and more people. You know, it used to be that the newspaper was the only game in town, maybe TV. And so if you wanted to get something out there, or, you know, if you wanted to defend yourself, you went to the newspaper. And now people don't feel like they have to do that. You know, we find that more in politics from Republicans, for instance. They have their places that they can go and not have to deal with objective media. Although we've done some outreach to say, look, we are a voice for everybody in Bozeman and the Gallatin Valley. And I have lived that on our editorial pages. If you send me an editorial and you're not libeling anybody and you're not putting egregious falsehoods in there, we will run it.
Yes, I've seen that over and over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's important. And, you know, in my personal politics are completely irrelevant. I wouldn't tell anybody how I vote. And, you know, I don't share it in the newsroom, and I don't share it out in public. And I think people need to know that they're getting a fair share here. But there are other places that people can go now other than the newspaper. And so we're trying to, I think, message ourselves and brand ourselves as we are 100% objective. And what we want is what's best for Bozeman and the Gallatin Valley. And there's a lot of people with a lot of opinions on that. And we'll occasionally weigh in on that. But that we are objective and we are fair, and we're also 100% human. By that I mean we are not letting artificial intelligence write or produce what we publish or that we put online. And a lot of people now are using artificial intelligence to do just that. So you can come to us and know that what we're producing has been done by a human as well.
And that was going to be our next question. How is AI impacting your work? And we just wanted to say we've found it so reassuring to hear you talking about trying to use good ethics and find the truth and report it and allow everybody to express opinions. And so we appreciate that. But going back to the question about AI, how much of an impact do you think it's making?
Well, it is really just starting to. And I was on an editor's call earlier this morning where I said, you know, I feel like I'm going from 0 to 100 miles an hour in a matter of months here when it comes to AI, because we are now for the first time having people question on social media whether something we've produced was done by AI. And we even I'll run some of our stories through an AI tool, a checker, to see if it comes back that it reads like it was done by AI. So, you know, I ran even one of my own when I did a story when Robert Redford passed away on the filmmaker here who worked on A River Runs Through It, which transformed this community. And I ran my story through the AI checker, and it said it was 97% written by a human. And I thought to myself, well, What was the other 3%? But we've had other stories that have been like 70% human, and so we're really curious what that other 30% was. But even more to the point, we have discussions about this all of the time here now, whereas we have some people in the newsroom who are adamant that we do not use AI for our stories. And yet there's one other person on our staff who says, why not? If you take a story that we've done and you run it through AI and AI improves it, what's the problem with that? It's better for the readers. And you can think of it as a spell check on steroids or a thesaurus on steroids, right? I mean, mm-hmm. From time to time, I will have a block trying to think of the right word, and I would look in a thesaurus to try to find it. You know, is that ethical or not? Well, now we've got the question about AI, and I think this is changing so fast that we're grappling with it. And, you know, one of the questions for our readership going forward is, are you okay if, you know, we have sort of the creative intellect here to go interview people or work on a story, but once we've got it all sort of processed, we run it through AI to improve the writing. Are people going to be okay with that? That's one of many questions we're grappling with.
How do you deal with issues of personal safety? I know in these times, journalists are being threatened.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and that's been going on forever. And sometimes it seems scarier. And every one of us practically have at some time or another have had death threats. The funny thing in my case, you know, I had one when I moved here 20 years ago over a sports column that predicted that the Grizzlies would finish ahead of the Bobcats in the Big Sky football standings. And at the time, the Grizzlies were terrific and the Bobcats weren't very good. So it was an obvious thing, but somebody actually told me I better be looking over my shoulder. But, you know, seriously, it's a good question. And I think it would be easy to be nervous, and there's always that possibility of that one person out there. But, you know, I think most people, when they threaten us, it's more bluster than anything else. You know, a friend of mine actually is Ryan Bussey, you know, who ran for governor and you know, wrote the book about the Second Amendment and his experience in the gun industry. And when that book came out, you know, he was crucified by a lot of people. And he and his family really did live in fear that somebody up in the Flathead was going to take a shot at him. But he was really gratified to see that the vast, vast majority of people, even in Kalispell, where the gun industry is a big deal, were supportive of what he wrote and who he was and what he did. And, you know, he himself has coined a term that I think about often. He calls some of these guys couch commandos because, you know, they sit in front of their computer and they make threats, but really, except in those rare instances, act on them. And so you do realize, though, that it goes with the territory that there are people who are really angry with you, and you know there are times where you're just careful about where you go, and you're very aware.
I don't see that critical thinking is being taught. Is it? Is there like from kindergarten up, especially in college? I don't see. Is it being taught?
You know what? That's a great question, Arliss, because that is my. I think that is my number one beef about our culture today, is that people are not doing critical thinking. And that includes a lot of really smart people. I would include my own brothers in that. It's, you know, they've got their biases confirmed. And I see a pushback, actually, against, you know, I see in the undermining of our public education right now is basically a pushback against critical thinking. You know, my wife is an elementary school teacher, retired now, but that was the number one thing that she did as a teacher was to teach her kids how to think critically. It wasn't about reading, writing, and arithmetic. You know, that was part of it. But, and I think that's some of the pushback about colleges today, because colleges really are where you go get out of your bubble and you learn to do more critical thinking and meet more interesting, diverse people. So I think 100% you're correct. Critical thinking is being frowned upon in our elementary schools, and I think that is just dramatically hurting us as a culture.
I couldn't agree more that it's something we need to build up rather than erase. And
yes,
I remember in high school, one thing that really helped me develop critical thinking, for anybody out there who wants to advise a son or a daughter or any younger people listening, join the debate team. There,
yeah,
everything you say has to be based on a fact or information or proof. And you can't just say things. You have to back them up with actual proof. And I know as a scientist doing research, they held us to a very high percentage of correctness. My dissertation on the research was at the 96% level. That was, you had to be 95% or above. And so there are still rigorous areas out there. We need to expose our young people every way we can to finding out how to gain proof and solid information.
Yeah, I completely agree. And there's just right now, there's just a lot of pushback against it. And I think by and large, it's a lot of people who are afraid of what science teaches us, especially. And, you know, afraid of looking at our past as a culture and as a country. And, you know, we're seeing that right now. And I don't think that's, we're going backwards, in my view. And there are a lot of people out there who are still, they're pushing in the right direction. But there's a blowback right now against science that is really frustrating. You know, when you talk about medicine, for instance. But I hope we can turn this around, but I'm not optimistic right now.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me a few years back. There were political signs up in the neighborhood, and I guess somebody didn't agree with one because there was a bullet hole right through it.
So
if we could, yeah, work on truth and learning to reach out to one another firmly and kindly. And I think the newspaper does a real good job of that. We really appreciate your work and your standards so very much, Jeff.
Well, I appreciate hearing that. And, for your listeners, I would say, with full confidence, and they can have full confidence, that is what we're striving for. You know, we're human, so we make mistakes. Our staff is still pretty small here, and so we wear a lot of hats, and it's pretty much nonstop. We can't get to everything we want to get to, but you know, people who are listening to this show can know that if they pick up the Chronicle, that every attempt has been made for this to be a product that's ethical, fair, objective, and striving to be balanced. I don't always use that term, and I'll use a sports example as to why. And that's, you take Bozeman and Gallatin high schools, for instance. If one of the teams is undefeated in football and the other team hasn't won a game, the coverage is not going to be balanced. The focus is going to be on the team that is having a winning season. But in general, we're also trying to be balanced. And so your listeners can be confident in the fact that that's what we strive for every day here.
You know, what we're talking about is external things that you can touch, can see, can verify the reality. In my field of psychology, the same is also true internally. There's something that about 20, 30 years ago, someone began to talk about cognitive distortions and assumptions that one makes about life from an early time, what people tell you and what they reinforce in you, which really aren't true. And so our job in psychotherapy was to help the person who comes in clinically depressed, for example, because they've always been told they weren't worth much, that this is true, that is true, you have to believe in this. It might be a certain false religious belief, although the culture they came from believed it. And so the job is to help them identify, okay, what is it am I doing? What do I believe that isn't true? And there's a whole list of possible cognitive distortions. Among them are black and white thinking. Well, this is always true and that is never true. Or overgeneralization. You take one instance and you generalize it to the 100% to make it true in every case. Or mental filter. You filter out everything except that which you've been told or somehow want to believe. Or, and I think that would go along with confirmation bias. Or the one that I found is very difficult is catastrophic thinking. Is that, this has happened, therefore it's all over. You know, it's a nuclear, it's the end. So what you're saying is true in the internal world as well.
Yeah, and, it's, hopefully this is along the same lines, but I'm often struck by how people can read the same story or the same column and come out with a completely different take on what they're reading.
Exactly.
You mean sort of like the blind men and the elephant.
Exactly. I mean, I was a sports columnist for many years, and I remember one time going to a football game and, having people within 10 minutes come up to me and have a completely opposite take on what I had written. So how can you do that? How can you do that? Clearly our brains are interesting things.
Well, we really appreciate this deep talk that we have been able to have about journalism. And a question I have in some of our remaining time is, this is a changing occupation. What would you say to young people who have that burning desire like you had or are directing their thoughts toward becoming a journalist? First of all, we didn't get to talk about how you prepare to be a journalist. And next of all, would you recommend that?
I absolutely would. And one thing I'm really encouraged by is in the times that I've spent reaching out to high schools and the colleges, for instance, MSU here does not have a journalism program, but there's about 35 students working on the expo at the campus paper. And I'm seeing a bit of a surge, I think, in young people who want to do this. And, the good news is that there are many, many more options out there for people in this industry than there were when I started, even though the traditional newspaper isn't as flush and robust as it used to be. When I came out of college, though, the competition was so stiff. And part of that was because of the movie, All the President's Men. Mm-hmm. But there are so many different ways, even starting your own Substack online and being on YouTube to where that you can make some money that way. And so I also see a lot of young people who are looking at what people my age have done to our culture here and saying, we want to make a difference. And journalism is a way I can make a difference. There are still very strong journalism programs in colleges around here and they're around the country. And there are ways for kids to get their feet in the door. I've seen more papers at high schools than I think there had been maybe 10 years ago. So I am encouraged, and I would definitely encourage kids to follow this, because I will say this, I've been doing this, like I said in the beginning, for 45 years, and I haven't worked a day in my life other than, a short period here and there where I had toxic people in the environment. Otherwise, this to me has been a noble profession, and you get to meet extraordinary people and write about them. And that's a pretty cool thing.
Absolutely. So do you recommend, say, going to college to study English as a prompt for journalism, or to find a college that actually has a specific journalism program?
You know, it's a good question, Suzanne. The one thing unique about journalism is that although if you go to a journalism school, you will get good instruction, especially in the basics, and it helps you a little bit when you get out. But the reality is journalism is like it's the one thing where you don't need your grades don't really matter. It's your clips, and you can also. You can get a degree in political science if you want to be a political writer. You can get a degree in science if you want to be a science writer. All that really matters is get your foot in the door and volunteer to write so that you have your clips that you can show somebody like me to get hired. So no, you don't need to get an English degree or a journalism degree, even though a journalism degree is a good way to go.
Okay.
Just a little bit of a offline question here. How does a journalism professor or an English professor know now if something is created by AI or the student who turns it in?
Well, that's a good question. So a lot of it is, you know, trusting your instincts. And I think we're going to learn this more and more as time goes along. And then there are tools now, as I mentioned earlier, where you can run something through AI, and AI will tell you if it's AI.
Huh. And, that's self-defeating.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, that's very clever. I love that. Okay, I wasn't aware of that. Good.
It's amazing stuff, you know. I mean, I remember being awed by the internet when it came in the mid-90s, and now the internet feels like rotary phones compared to what we're dealing with now.
Yeah. I wonder, do you sponsor any internships at the newspaper for students or those wanting to enter the field?
Yes. Pretty proud of the fact that we, for the first time at the Chronicle this summer, had two interns from MSU who were both very talented, and one of them is still on our staff part-time going through the school year, and the other one is going to write for us on a freelance basis. But yeah, and the goal is to try to hire them on, or at least one of them on, when they graduate from MSU, so that we keep this train rolling.
Oh, that's splendid to hear. Just while we are still on this story, would you tell us how people could sign up for the newspaper, and maybe mention how students would apply for an internship, and give us some home information here?
Yeah, I'll start with the second question first, and that's, you know, generally I go up to MSU and I speak to the exponent folks and I say, hey, you know, if you want to have an internship with us, just let me know and get me your resume and some clips, and then we have to go through a process to get an internship. But it's really that simple. And then the same thing is true of signing up for a subscription to the Chronicle. You just you can call, but I think the best, easiest way is to go online, and on our homepage you can find the subscribe button. And you have choices. I think if you get the print edition, you also get digital, or you can just get the digital version. And I think we're actually offering specials right now for like $10 a month. I think I saw not too long ago to at least start out. So pretty simple process, subscribing.
And if you do subscribe to the paper, the print version, does that also give you access to the online information that you provide?
It does. You will be able to go in and do a login and a password and get in there. And I I really encourage that, in part because I think someday print newspapers will go away, even though we've kind of plateaued right now. But the main advantage to the digital is it is fresh. There are stories that we post on Friday that don't get to print until Tuesday because we have limited space and we don't have a Monday or Sunday print edition. So anything that is current news that we're wanting to get in front of people as soon as possible, you're going to see that online. Whereas the print publication, I've already put that paper to bed today, and you won't get it in your mailbox until tomorrow afternoon because it's the postal service now. So it's even hard to call it news anymore. That's in the newspaper. Everything's at least a day late.
So we need to keep in mind that it's good for us to experience change and to develop the ability to try new things, and that is a good exercise for our brain muscles. So everybody out there, let's try and get on board with the technology and the changes.
Yes, you know, I mean, that's a great point. And I'll tell you kind of a funny story. But before I came here, I started the statewide sports website for the papers with Lee newspapers, you know, so Billings, Missoula, Helena, Butte. And so that site was 406mtsports.com. I started in 2016 and it was 100% digital. And, you know, people were like, well, I can't read this in my paper. And I said, no, you're going to have to learn how to open your computer and do this if you want Montana sports. And, you know, by gosh, people wanted it badly enough that that's exactly what they did. And I heard from so many people who said, you know, I really just wanted to hold the paper version and I really didn't want to do this. But it's, you know what, it works great. It's fine. And I've actually gotten used to reading this on the computer. So there is hope, even if you're really reluctant or wary.
And, you know, change, Arliss has always said, as a psychologist, can be painful, but it also leads to growth and is very enlarging.
Well, no question. You know, and I kind of chuckle. I look at my desk here, and I've got a couple of awards for digital innovation. And, you know, when I got back in this job, in this business 10 years ago after a brief time away, I had no idea what to do digitally. Right. But once I got back as the sports editor of the Gazette in Billings in 2014, it took me 1 month basically to realize, oh my gosh, this world has changed after being away from it for 6 years. And so I poured myself into the digital side of this to the point where I actually print was secondary. And so, you know, you're right. Change was difficult at first, but necessary. Once I really poured myself into it, it became really stimulating and rewarding.
What final words would you like to tell the community that's listening, if you could summarize what you said and told us today?
Well, just that, you know, we are here to be that objective and fair news outlet, and that, you know, I want people to understand or know that we're still here. We're still fighting. We feel like we're an important part of the community, and we're not going away. We're going to keep the people in power. We're going to comfort the afflicted, afflict the comforted, and just that. If your listeners feel strongly about this, to support local journalism, whether it's us, whether it's the Montana Free Press, you name it, the Exponent at MSU, there's a lot of ways that you can provide support. And local journalism is essential to the health of a community. And in many cases, it's sort of the anchor to a community, much like a school. And so that's what I want people to know, and to encourage supporting all local journalism through subscriptions and other means.
Thank you so much for this enlightening program, and thank you, Gallatin Valley, for listening. See you next time.
Thanks to you.
Thank you.